Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Psyched Perspectives. I'm your host, Dr. Frank Clark, and I'm based in Greer, South Carolina. I'm excited to welcome my guest, Dr. Julia Rhodes, who is going to be sharing in her perspectives about how we can approach chronic pain using an integrative approach. Dr. Rhodes is a fourth-year resident at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, South Carolina. She is an avid researcher of chronic pain, focusing on brain stimulation interventions for the management and gender differences in pain. Dr. Rhodes, as a paraplegic and a clinician, is passionate about educating others about chronic pain conditions, treatment, and advancements. In her free time, she enjoys surfing her wave ski at Folly Beach. Dr. Rhodes, welcome to our episode, and it is so good to see you. I remember that when you were on the residency trail over 4 years ago interviewing you. And so it's comes full circle. It's so I'm blessed to have you on our podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's good to see you again as well.
Well, this is a topic that I know is important to you for many reasons, but I know this being in psychiatry, you know, and our audience, we have a lot of mental health professionals that tune in to our podcast. I was curious if you could elaborate on why you were so passionate about advocating for a variety of treatment modalities as it relates to treating people who are living with chronic pain.
Yeah. So as I finished my school and entered residency, I realized that most of the chronic pain patients see psychiatry. And we end up with co-managing so much of the chronic pain. And when I started my research, I learned about the shared neural pathways of chronic pain and how they're shared with mood depression, with anxiety. We're treating the areas of the brain, and there's so much overlap with the treatments that work for chronic pain, work for depression, and work for mood disorders, vice versa. One of the things that I became really passionate about was understanding where we have been in society when it comes to treating pain and where we would like to go. You know, we in Western medicine, we still focus on treatment and management of chronic pain as something to get rid of. We have to resolve this, live without pain, focus on treating the pain, getting rid of it before we can do anything else. People stop their lives when they have pain to first get rid of it and then live. So that approach is an endless loop. People continue to chase finding a life without pain. And that's part of what led us to the opioid epidemic, looking for these ways to get rid of pain. And to wonder, what are the things that happen in the brain when someone is having this pain signal over and over again? Why does it look so much like depression?
I wholeheartedly agree with you. And you and I both know in treating a lot of our patients with chronic pain who also have comorbid anxiety and depression, that it's not a one size fits all. And maybe their pain doesn't resolve, but we to teach them to live with the pain and still have a good quality of life. And that quality of life is going to look different for everyone.
Exactly. I learned that I needed to change the dialogue with patients instead of getting rid of pain, of learning to live the life you want to live despite your pain. And so wanted to understand what I was treating. As a resident, you inherit patients who are on medication regimens that you might not understand or know why. And so when you're talking with the patient about what exactly you're treating, I wanted to understand almost like trying the levels of consciousness. I wanted to understand the levels of the pain experience. And I learned through the research that it is very similar. A pain experience is very similar to the biopsychosocial model that we all know. And when someone has chronic pain, when they feel pain, they're feeling the biological sensation of that pain, the physical sensation, but they're also experiencing their affective distress to the how they respond. Is it catastrophized or is it something to ignore? And then they are also practicing their learned experience with pain, that social model that caregiver showed them. And without any sort of biomarkers for how to tell how severe someone's pain is, we're just reliant on the scales. But I wanted to understand why somebody's pain is waking up a 10 out of 10 for this person, but another person, that diabetic neuropathy is a 3 out of 10.
I really appreciate where you're coming from, especially as we think about pain from a biopsychosocial, and I would even add cultural, spiritual aspect as well. I found this poem, as you know, I'm a poet. I found this poem online that I would like to read to you and share with our audience, and I would love to hear your reflections. This is a poem by Nina Roska. And it is about pain. And the title of the poem is It Hurts to Be Awake. As I lie in bed, trying to fall asleep, I can feel the pain traveling through my body like an elevator in a bustling hotel, going up, down, going up, never stopping. Not even for a second. Pain travels slow and steady through every fiber of my body. It's ever present, like the smog in every city. You can't always see it. You know it's there. You feel it. You breathe it. You learn to live with it. Until you can no more. My rules fail me every day. I gave up smoking and so many other things that brought me joy. The joy of knowing you are young, you are strong, you are intangible. You can smoke now, you are all these things, and nothing can hurt you. But I am not. I am not intangible. I am not invisible. I have my limits, and I am approaching them more and more each day. I'm a fast car heading towards a brick wall. I can only do the things I love for so long. As I sit here and type, I try my best to ignore the stabbing pain. To have hunkered down between my shoulder blades. I keep stretching muscles in the hopes that all that stretching might cut it loose, but it doesn't. I am in a perpetual state of pain. They say that nothing in life lasts forever. I have found that to be untrue. When it comes to pain, pain does last. It stays with you. You can take medication. You can do yoga. You can smoke pot, but nothing will obliterate its presence. You can dim the feeling of pain, but you can't make it go away. Only death can help you now.
Wow. That was very powerful.
I felt I was very palpable as I was reading it out loud, and I could appreciate the imagery and just the symbolism, and kind of based on what, you know, what we've been talking about so far of you can't take it away. It does last. But I would love to hear your reflections on the poem.
I mean, she speaks to see and just that even though it's chronic pain, every time you feel that pain episode, it is as painful as it was the very first day, and how much despair that causes when there doesn't seem to be an end in sight.
No, I totally agree. And I've never experienced chronic pain, so I don't have that lived experience, but I can empathize with the poet, because you and I have seen, and you know this from a personal, you have your own lived experience, but seeing patients who sit across from us each and every day. What is it that I read and looking at statistics, 1 in 5 individuals in the United States have chronic pain.
Yeah.
It's pretty significant.
It's about 20%. Yeah. And of those, it's upwards of 75% have a comorbid anxiety and depression. And you know the reason I got into pain research was from my own pain experience. And I'm a spinal cord injury from an accident. When we met during my residency, actually, during my medical school training, actually, my spinal cord injury had shifted. It had grown. It had changed. I had regained sensation, and that's common with spinal cord injuries. But the sensation that I regained was pain, and so I, you know, now I know what my intellectual coping, but I took the biopsychosocial model approach to try to understand why the solutions that were being presented to me were either sedating me to the point where I couldn't participate in medical school anymore, or just weren't working. And I created this three-step approach. I was able to be connected to have a stimulator placed, and that I finally had a non-pharmacological way to control pain for the learned experience of pain and the effect of distress of pain. I aided in acceptance commitment therapy for chronic pain, which evidence is showing us is the gold standard, unlike cognitive behavioral therapy, where you need to sort of argue with the thoughts. Acceptance and commitment is all about that radical acceptance of understanding your pain experience. And then I took a different approach to change. One of the things that poem spoke to is the helplessness, being stuck with this monster that continues to ravage your life. And I wanted to feel my own strength again. I wanted to remind myself of my own power. So I live down here in Low Country, where there are rivers and marshes, and where my pain is lower, it is in my lower body. So I went paddling, I went kayaking every week, no matter how much pain I was in. And that was the point. I wanted to experience pulling myself forward with my paddle while I was in pain, so I could feel that strength while I was also feeling pain.
That's very profound. I was, as you were talking about that, I kind of had this image of you pulling yourself while accepting the pain for what it is and not judging your feelings, right? I know we talk about that in acceptance and commitment therapy, and I use that therapy modality a lot in for my individuals with anxiety, depression, substance use disorders, right? There it runs the gamut, but right, we don't have to judge our feelings. We can identify them, right? You identify that, yes, I am in pain, but what do I do with that? I can still live my truth. I can still live I can still be strong in this wilderness that I've been walking through for so long, but that doesn't have to be the narrative for me throughout the journey. So I think that's very powerful, and I hope that our listeners, even if they don't have the lived experience of chronic pain, hopefully in some other ways, because we're all battling something in our lives. And so I think that acceptance commitment therapy can be very valuable for many reasons. So I appreciate you being vulnerable and transparent and talking about your own journey. Along those lines, Dr. Rose, I was curious, what are you most proud of as you've gone throughout your residency and been an advocate for, again, looking at people, whether they have chronic pain or other comorbidities? What have you most proud of in terms of your advocacy efforts, maybe not just in the state of South Carolina, but even on a national level? Because I know you've written perspective pieces and published some things, and kudos to you for your knowledge.
I'm most proud. That's a great question. I am most proud of learning how to use my disability, my visible disability, as a tool, how to live with it, how to practice with it. I find that I'm not always welcome as a, or I'm questioned as a physician because of my disability, because I don't look like the able-bodied doctor that we all have grown up thinking doctors to be. I have also learned how powerful of a transference patients have. I am one of the luckiest psychiatrists that I know, because I have two parts of me that patients interact with. I have myself, and they have their own transference towards me, based on my personality, but then they have my chair, and it can be profound how comforted patients are by seeing someone else who understands, or they assume knows suffering, and how, we are very literally on the same level. They're usually sitting, and so am I. I'm never standing above them. And many people live their life with disabilities in different ways, some very publicly, some not. And I quickly learned in medical school that this was something that was going to be a visible part of my experience. And I'm very proud that I have learned how to love it, use it, acknowledge it, and be very comfortable with myself with it.
I appreciate what you said about being on the same level, right? And what the chair symbolizes for you. And you're right, there is a lot of transference that goes into that. And I think a lot of times our patients tell us, you don't understand. You've never lived in my shoes. And there is some validity to what they're saying, but I think, right, as you mentioned, there are some disabilities that are visible to the eye, where there are other disabilities or chronic issues that people are experiencing that are not visible, right? And so somebody who has experienced depression, you may not know that because they're doing well. You can't really see that. But when it comes to someone who ambulates with a wheelchair, that takes on a different meaning. And I would think that there is a sense of shared humanity that comes
Yeah.
with that, when your patients are sitting across from you and saying, "Wow, she does see me. She
You
sees me
get
for
it
who I am."
too.
You get it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I am very, very lucky that I get to experience that very quickly with people. I love working with chronic pain patients because their hurts are usually invisible. Most of psychiatry, what people are with is not visible. And so I represent the pain that they feel sometimes, and whether I know their experience or not. But I'm very lucky that trust is built quickly.
Absolutely. What would be some of your pearls of wisdom in terms of how we can be better as mental health professionals? How could we be better advocates, not only at a state level, but at a national level? Because we know that individuals with chronic pain this is a population that is often marginalized in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And when we know that groups are marginalized, they tend to not get the quality of care that they are deserving of. And they are pretty much kind of shunned by society. And people will say, "It's all in your head. You just have to deal with it." And instead of validating their experiences, there comes this invalidation. So I'm curious, what have you found helpful from an advocacy standpoint, and what would you share with our audience members or viewers that the steps that they can take to be better advocates for our communities?
That poem really spoke to how dismissed these chronic pain patients can feel, marginalized, just like you're saying, invalidated. And if there's one thing that I would want to change with chronic pain patients for everyone is that they feel heard. And it doesn't matter if the physician listening or the provider listening already knows the story, already knows what hasn't worked, but the act of them being able to tell their truth is such a powerful part of healing, healing for them, that even that in itself is going to be therapeutic, that retelling. I speak to medical students about, how we are entering in this sort of post opioid epidemic. At the tail end of it, we are entering into conversations with patients that we need to, let me say that again. We have inherited conversations with patients that need to change. The one thing I hope all providers start changing is talking to chronic pain patients about realistic expectations, about returning to their lives and making their goals about, I want to be able to attend this event. I want to be able to go back to this type of work, making their goals their functionality instead of making their goals a pain score. I want to wake up with a 2 out of 10 pain is not a realistic goal. If we start looking more about how I want to be living, that's when we can really start healing.
As you were eloquently outlining your steps for advocacy, I couldn't help but think of SMART goals.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you're looking at, in terms of realistic expectations, specific goals, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely. So I received that. My last question for you, and again, I thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me today. This has been
Of course.
a great conversation. As you look toward the future, I know there's always various interventions that we are looking at to help improve the quality of life. I know you mentioned the stimulator. Are there other things in the literature that you've been looking at that you find will be promising innovative treatment strategies to help alleviate the pain not just the emotional pain, but the physical pain, because they there's intersectionality there that you think can help communities who are living with chronic pain.
Yeah, one very exciting, promising intervention that has been studied for fibromyalgia is TMS. TMS is able to target the same regions of the brain that are impacted in chronic pain, and it has very positive effects. We are getting more and more confident that it is efficacious for chronic pain. So I'm And so I am at the Medical University of South Carolina, where this is a big hub for TMS, but that is one intervention that I'm really excited about as a non-pharmaceutical intervention.
Wonderful. Well, I look forward to looking at the studies about that, and hopefully we will be able to get more people to be
No.
open to doing TMS. And I would just be curious too, do you think that insurance would cover TMS for fibromyalgia?
With right now, I don't know. I think though that there's so much overlap with depression that it does end up being covered. But there are studies around South Carolina as well that people can enroll in.
That's good to know. Well, Dr. Rhodes, thank you for
Thank you.
this wonderful conversation. Keep thriving and keep flourishing. I appreciate all that you're doing in the community, especially in the state of South Carolina. And what is next for you as you prepare to graduate from residency?
Yeah, I am. I'm a proud Ar Army wife, and I'm actually entering the VA system. So I'm very excited.
Well, I congratulations. The
Thank you.
veterans, what you will be a blessing to the veterans, and I know you will receive their blessing as well. So I am happy that you will be serving our veterans. They are in need of care, and many of them, it's a demographic that often goes, it often is in exile or ostracized as well, and they are
Yeah.
dealing with chronic pain for various reasons.
Yes.
So you will have a lot to contribute. So thank
I
you
hope
again.
so. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, this is another episode of Psychiatric Times Psych Perspectives. Thanks for joining us, and we can't wait to see you again in September. Peace and blessings to you all.
This podcast is presented by Psychiatric Times, the number one psychiatric publication in the U.S. Visit us at psychiatrictimes.com for the latest clinical news, expert perspectives, and CME opportunities. Thank you for listening.